Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Resilient Health Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Darren Ingalls, and joining me on the podcast today is my friend and colleague, Dr. Keisha Ewers. Just a little bit about Dr. Keisha. She's board certified in functional medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, a doctor of sexology, trauma-informed psychotherapist, family practice advanced registered nurse practitioner, in specialty in integrative medicine. She's also certified in MDMA assisted psychotherapy, counseling doula, and she's teaches practitioners all over the world on integrative medicine and trauma. And Dr. Keisha, I'm just so happy to have you on the podcast today.
I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you.
So we're going to talk about something today that we have not ever talked about before, but I think it's such an important thing, and that's libido. And, you know, I'm sure in your practice, my practice, we hear this all the time from our patients about having low libido and not feeling as maybe sexually vigorous as they would like. So can you just explain a little bit, people, about, you know, what is libido and what is it that drives it for both men and women?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the reason I focus on the word libido is because the way that I think about it is that it's your life force vitality. So this came from Ayurvedic medicine, which is the 10,000-year-old sister science of yoga. And it's where Chinese medicine came from. And Chinese medicine also has a word that means vitality. But we don't in our medical model. And so when I was contemplating this, when I was studying Ayurveda, I thought, what do we have that's akin to this word ojas? You know, ojas is, they think about it as like the drops of life. And when you burn through them, you're dead, you know, like you're done. You get a certain amount when you're born. It's very, very hard to regenerate it. And you deplete it through a number of different things that, you know, functional medicine talks about all the time, not sleeping, drinking lots of coffee, drinking alcohol, you know, and all of the things that we talk about. And so I was thinking about this and I thought, gosh, you know, the closest thing that, you know, if I ever go to a talk at a medical conference, let's say fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome or MS or whatever it is, right? On the PowerPoint slide of the presenter will be in the center of it will be the disease process. And then there'll be a set of like comorbidities and some symptoms and things like that that go alongside that disease process. And I began noticing that low energy and low sexual desire, libido, were actually on every one of those lists. You know, it's like, yeah, this is one of the first things to go when your body is trying to get your attention and one of the last things to come back on board when you're achieving balance. And so I thought, why is that not in the center of the circle? And these disease processes over out here as like, here's what your body will eventually land on if you ignore this other part, right? Which is the draining of your vitality. So libido comes from the Latin word desire, desire, and that means from the stars. And I began really, again, meditating on this. And I thought, gosh, this really is our birthright, this energy and passion for life, vitality. And we don't seem in our productivity model of culture to really acknowledge or feel gratitude and appreciation for when we have it, but we really don't like it when it's gone. And we have a number of different dysfunctional ways of trying to change our reality when we're tired, and it actually continues to drain that libido. And so I started studying this, and you know, people will say, wow, a PhD in sexology, that's so interesting, how did you get there? You know, and it's through this curiosity that I had. Gosh, you know, we don't really have any research that I'm finding in PubMed that really talks about this thing that I'm learning in Eastern philosophy and philosophical models of medicine. I wonder, you know, what this is about and what drains it in terms of our modern day contemporary society. So I went back to school, and in my doctoral work, I did a study called the Healing Unresolved Trauma Study. And it was a pilot study of 100. I was looking at women in the study. And I was asking questions about you know, where does that libido go and what can we do to bring it back? And so that study had some pretty incredible findings that have informed my medical practice and my own life ever since.
So are you finding a difference between what drives libido for men versus women? Is it really kind of the same factors or is it something completely different?
Well, there's not one thing, so that helps, right? And that's usually the way it is, right? We're always looking for the smoking gun, right? What's the one thing that we can do to change our reality when it's never one thing that actually drives it out of alignment in the first place? And yes, there are some differences. And so I'll start with what I discovered with female, in those days, it was called hypoactive sexual desire disorder in 2013 when I was studying it. Now it's female interest and arousal disorder, sexual interest and arousal disorder. And what the findings were that I thought was kind of compelling was if you go in to see a medical provider as a female and you say, I have low libido, guess what the things are that are offered to you are?
I can imagine. See a therapist, get a counselor.
Yeah.
Are they really looking as much at the chemical problem? Because I see that in practice, it seems that men complain about it. The first thing to look at, let's look at your hormones, testosterone. And rarely, I think, do they address some of the psycho-emotional aspects where I think with women, it's kind of the other way around. Is that accurate?
That's where we're going, to answer that question is exactly the things that I discovered in the literature that were being offered again and again and again. And this is what took me back to school, actually, was this frustration. The number one thing offered to a woman who comes in with low libido is a serotonin reuptake inhibitor antidepressant, an SSRI like Lexapro or Prozac. And guess what its number one side effect is? Low libido.
Low libido.
But at least you won't be sad about your low libido, right? And I thought, this is great. Like, why is this the number one thing? The second thing that was offered in medical offices, and this is still true, by the way, this hasn't changed since 2013 when I was doing a review of the literature, is a lubricant, for low libido, a vaginal lubricant. It's like, well, no, that's if you have atrophying vaginal tissue and you have painful intercourse, sure. That's something you had offered, but that's a mechanical problem. And low libido, is something quite different. And so hormones are checked, usually just using blood testing, though, and not how the person is breaking down and using and then excreting excess byproducts, that's not tracked. And so these were sort of the three things. Let's give them testosterone for females. If the blood test says that they're low in testosterone, offer a lubricant, offer a psychological counseling session with a therapist, and then don't check in, like the providers don't talk to each other. And it turned out in the literature, nurse practitioners were the highest category of people that would even ask about libido. And a lot, and the barriers, of why providers weren't asking is because they had discomfort with their own sexual life. And so I thought this is interesting because actually doctors are taught, and to a large extent, nurse practitioners, PAs, NDs, DOs, like the spectrum of medical providers are taught how to prevent pregnancy and how to work with pregnancy and how to cure STDs. And that's about it. When it comes to sexual health, that was interesting too. When I found that out in the literature. So for men, for women, the number one cause of low libido, and this was really fascinating because hormones and lubricants and antidepressants don't help this, is relationship dissatisfaction. Number one, like way far ahead of all the other things, relationship dissatisfaction. I'm not in the mood to have sex with someone I'm upset with. Well, that makes a lot of sense, right? And the other thing about female sexual desire is that another study that was super life-altering and compelling for me, and I try and quote it now all the time, is that 69% of women in a committed relationship of 1 year or longer, 69% no longer has spontaneous sexual desire. So it's actually more normal than not to not have to be in the mood. But if you're in a safe, loving relationship, you understand the value of intimacy and sexual engagement with your partner and yourself, then, you know, you can commit to being aroused first and then desire can follow. So that's the difference actually between males and female bodies, is that desire has to come first for a male body. And that's what Masters and Johnson was tracking when they did their studies in the 1950s. And unfortunately, the model got, you know, kind of extrapolated to everybody when the females that were part of that study were actually prostitutes. So they were more in a utilitarian, right, engagement than one that included emotional intimacy. So Rosemary Basson, who is an OBGYN and researcher in Vancouver, British Columbia, in the 1980s, published for the very first time since the Masters and Johnson's model, a model that showed the difference between male and female desire, and that females are more likely to enter into the desire arousal and then maybe not orgasm cycle in a variety of different parts in the circle, and then for different reasons. So, you know, the parts of the brain that light up with desire are different in a male brain than a female brain. And in fact, this was another compelling finding I found in my work. I had never seen it published before. I don't know if I was the first one to talk about it, but I looked at a bunch of fMRI scans, and what I saw was that the parts of the brain that are required for females to have sexual desire that light up for us are hijacked when you have PTSD or if you're engaged in a stressful thought. So if you fill out a personal stress inventory and call yourself overwhelmed, it will actually light up in your brain the same as capital T trauma, PTSD, and that will then make it so that you can't have sexual desire.
Wow.
And that's not the same for men. So there are some differences for sure.
Yeah, I'm really surprised the number of young people that come into my practice that are complaining of low libido. I mean, I can remember being in my 20s and 30s and having, you know, a much higher sexual desire. But I now have young men, young women in their 20s, 30s, no desire, no sexual appetite. You know, what do you think is going on with younger people these days that's contributing to that?
Yeah, such a good question. Are you familiar with the work that was done by the Princeton researchers that talked about deaths of despair?
No.
So there are a couple of Princeton researchers that started publishing data that the insurance companies picked up, the large insurance companies, and started doing internal white papers on it because it was so compelling. And that is that we are on the rise in our culture with what they term deaths of despair that transcends gender, age, socioeconomic class, ethnicity, demographics, educational status, all of it. So all parties, right, that are studied are going up with deaths of despair, and deaths of despair are termed suicide, cirrhosis of the liver, and drug and alcohol overdoses. So these are going up, and the despair part is because that's at the root cause. And so it's like white males born in 1940 have the same outcomes on some of these stats, the actuarial tables now that are being tracked, as 18-year-old young men. And again, doesn't matter what the ethnicity is, which has never been the case in our country. We've always had these disparities and changes in the way, like religion and things like that. This is like this trend that's been going up over the last 20 years. And I found it kind of fascinating because actually, I think 5 years ago is when I really started diving into this literature before the pandemic, which you might guess has made it worse. So, I started looking at this, I had a patient that was a high-ranking officer in one of the big insurance companies and was I she had heard me talk about this and said, "Do you want one of those white papers that we circulate internally?" And I said, I would love that because I wanted to go look, start doing some research on this because one of the other graphs that I was starting to put on top of it that no one else was talking about was the very same trend was going up throughout, again, religions, ethnicities, all of it, of people leaving churches, synagogues, temples. So religiosity was going down, deaths of despair were going up. I thought, well, that's interesting. And so I went back to school to get a master's in divinity because I was really interested in studying what's going on in our culture where this thing that you're talking about, our young people are having this kind of despair, right? And at the same time, places where in the 1950s and 60s people would go for comfort, pastoral care, they're eschewing it, right? This isn't something that now feels like a source of comfort.
Right.
So I started looking, from the Judeo-Christian standpoint in the Bible for positive, what we would call sex positive stories, because I was seeing what you're seeing, low libido in young people, like really young people, right? Teenagers who have those hormones drop in like 50 tons of power, and they're not acting the way that other generations, with that mandate to replicate the species, right? And so I thought, oh, this is interesting. I'm curious, are there sex positive stories in some of the literature that has been around for so long? And one of my colleagues, Tina Shermer Sellers, said that she had poured through a lot of Judeo-Christian lore and had come across a story from the Torah that took place in Jerusalem and in the Holy of Holies in Solomon's Temple. The rabbis were going in and praying and saying, can we have so much fornication happening in our village, right? Jerusalem. And like the Ten Commandments are being broken left and right. And can you just like take this energy away, right? Stuff that we're talking about right now that is already declining, it was really powerfully strong. And they were saying this is a problem in our society. And so, God appeared as a lion and said, "Are you sure this is the co-creative energy that I bring for you to create?" And they said, Yes, get rid of it, please." And so then they witnessed this lion of fire go over the temple wall and off into the desert. And they went, "Oh, good." And then started noticing in Jerusalem over the ensuing 2 or 3 months that chickens stopped laying eggs and artists stopped painting and creating and the potters weren't making pots anymore and people weren't getting pregnant and all the things that this creative energy feeds, gone. No building, no nothing, no music. So they went back into the Holy of Holies and said, "Can you please come back?" And then said, okay, can we have it back at half dose?" And God said, "No, you have it and you behave responsibly or you don't, And so they said, "Okay, right." And so there's this story there that's talking about responsible behavior and the fact that this is co-creative energy with the sacred, and that when we're missing it, our culture suffers, right? So this is something that is, a really great question when you say, well, why is this happening with our young people? They're coming in, and this has never been the case. And I would say that the despair that is in our culture right now is pretty powerfully heavy and weighing on them. There's, you know, we have like terms that we've never had before, right? Failure to launch, you know, 30 something year olds living at home. The American dream that you buy a house, you get a job, you have a pension, you know, a single family dwelling. This generation is finding that that dream is not just as available for picking as it was for me. You know, I came out of school, got a job, got married, bought a house, you know, all the things that have been generationally in place for several generations, no longer possible for this group, right? And so a lot of that, I think, is affecting, again, that vitality, right? Because we're talking about passion and purpose. So there's a lot of despair right now that's affecting this kind of vitality.
Yeah, I also wonder how much, like, even chemicals in the environment,
since some for sure,
have hormonal influences. And again, we're seeing this, you know, early childhood, we're seeing precocious puberty, we're seeing, you know,
yep,
lots of issues with young boys and girls that are probably at least in part related to the chemical influence on how our hormones are being affected. And, you know, I think the other big elephant in the room that I remember listening to, I think, a podcast with Dr. Drew Pinsky, was talking about pornography and
yes,
the effect that it's having on not just young people, but all people. And again, I think pandemic probably made that a lot worse when
I'm sure you're right.
Socially and sexually isolated, and, you know, access is easy. If you have an internet connection, you know, what's your experience been with that? And, you know, how do we help people kind of navigate that landmine?
Well, there are two questions that you just asked, and one is chemical and then the other is habitual. And so the chemical part, absolutely. You know, we have autoimmunity on the rise, and we know that estrogen dominance is one of the key factors. And we have several thousand tons of chemicals being poured into our air, water, and soil every day, just like unchecked, right? And so with young men, you know, we used to say DEXA scans were, that was a female health imaging, right?
Yeah.
I send men, younger men now, for DEXA scans, because I'm finding that they're having a lot of the same problems with the testosterone deficiency and estrogen dominance that women are having. So, you know, like we're really, I remember being in Australia 15 years ago, being in Tasmania, and taking my husband and my kids were going on a little fairy penguin tour with a biologist, a marine biologist. And he was talking about how these little fairy penguins in Tasmania were coming on shore twice a year now, when they used to only reproduce once a year. So, you know, we've in Elliott Bay here in the Pacific Northwest, we have the same issue with different kinds of fish because of all the estrogen in the water. So we're really contaminating our own nest, you know, so for sure, that's a big, big issue. We know glyphosates that are being sprayed on our crops are causing fertility issues left and right. We're having a hard time detoxifying from all of this. So yes, yes, and yes, right? So I was talking about some of the more non-studied, unlooked for issues, you know, when we start talking about emotional, mental, but the physical level, so much of this. And then porn has been around for a really long time. Internet porn has been around for a very long time. And so this doesn't, it's not just this generation, right? This easy access has been present for probably three, right? Generations. And porn addiction is a gigantic issue. And, you know, same with video gaming and alcohol and, you know, drug use that went up during the pandemic. It's definitely an issue. And it is one of the things that when you're talking about the difference between male and female brains and sexual desire, dopamine is the big ringer for men, right? That is actually the big one for sexual desire for them. And so if that's getting met in a different way, then emotional intimacy actual engagement with another human being isn't going to be on the top of the priority list.
Yeah. Well, I know it's a complicated issue because there's so many factors involved. You know, how do we help people get their mojo back?
Yeah. So I think about it in terms of, in my study, I found that there were five root causes for men and women when it came to low libido. So you would look in the body, in the heart, in the mind, in the spirit, and in the story. I call it the libido story. And so there are two different kinds of low libido. One is acquired, meaning you've had sexual desire, you've had vitality, passion, and purpose, and then it goes away. And the other is innate, meaning from the time you were a teenager, you never had desire and it never flipped on for you, either for yourself or for another. And the root causes for innate low libido usually have to do with mental, like OCD, anxiety, and trauma, right? Those are the primary root causes for innate. Acquired low libido will be the stressors, you know, relationship dissatisfaction, getting a new job, losing a job, financial stuff, and all of the physical things that you and I just talked about as, you know, like part and parcel of it. There, we have developmental stages that we hit as we go from infancy to the time we die. And along the way in those developmental stages, we're supposed to hit these different milestones, like learning how to tie your shoe, learning how to speak, learning how to play with others, right? There are also sexual milestones to meet that are often not taught to parents. And we sort of outsourced it, I think, in our culture to the church, who then said, desire is a sin. So in the spiritual department of low libido, there can be some real problems, like good girls don't, you know, the angel horror complex. Like there are all kinds of different things that we could dive into, but that, you know, okay, so now you're married, you can turn on the faucet that you've had your hose crimped down now for so long, and then it doesn't turn on, right? In the physical realm, thyroid, chemotherapy, radiation, a surgical, post-op issue, anything that has an ICD-10 code attached to it, right? Any kind of illness, disease, imbalance, these can all cause low libido, pain, chronic pain, acute pain. You know, your vitality, that passion and purpose will go away if you can only think about getting out of pain, right? And so then that transcends and goes into the kinds of pain that we experience that are not just physical, emotional and mental pain too. So in the emotional and mental root cause sections, it's I have a triage chart that I teach when I speak to providers from stages, you know, and it's like how to ask those questions, and our listeners can ask themselves the same questions. You know, is there a place where if I am partnered, where I'm annoyed or upset with my partner, or do I have body image issues and I don't feel sexy, so then I don't want to have sex? So in any relationship, if it's a dyad, there's going to be a high desire partner for sex and a low desire partner for sex. And that is just the way it is. It's always going to be that way. And in any given relationship, that role can change. Like you may be the low desire partner in one relationship and you become the high desire partner in another relationship. And this is interesting and important because the person that's the low desire partner for sex in a relationship has all the power. Right. And they don't want the power. They usually just want to be left alone. So they hold every card. You know, they'll say how often sexual engagement can occur. Are the lights on or off? What are we wearing? What position do we take? How long can it go? How often is it happening? Where is it happening? And so the high desire partner for sex will often, if there's not really, I always say, fantastic sex is a result of fantastic communication. And so if there's not really great communication between the two, and a lot of this becomes passive aggressive, then the high desire partner for sex in a relationship will become the low desire partner for something else that's important to their partner. Mm-hmm. It might be emotional intimacy. That's sort of like the stereotype, right? I'm not going to talk about my feelings. I'm not going to engage with you emotionally because I'm feeling deprived. And it could be financial security. Like, oh, I feel stuck over here, trapped and controlled. So I'm going to go control or overspend over here. It may be with food. It may be with, you know, it'll be, there's all kinds of choices, but the teeter totter will start going like this. And often when I see couples before they come for counseling, they're in the state that we call emotional gridlock. And with gridlock, that low desire, high desire teeter totter has gotten so dramatic that now there's a stalemate, you know, and that's actually a really great place to get to in a relationship, actually. People always think of it as really bad. But what it is an opportunity to grow past childhood patterns, to learn to be more skillful in communication, to really recognize how to advocate for needs and to respect another person's needs. And so, you know, it's a call for more skill in the relationship. You either get to grow up or it's going to go away. And that's where that gridlock leads to.
Well, I mean, I think this is all really fascinating, and I know this is your wheelhouse. I know you have a program called The Libido Cure. Can you just share with the audience a little bit of what that's about?
Yeah, so The Libido Cure is a 7-module program that goes through these root, you know, body, mind, heart, spirit, and libido story areas where you can find where your vitality or your mojo, as you said, has been blocked and the flow isn't there. And so it really helps to find and fix wherever that flow has been broken. And you get to learn a lot about yourself. I always encourage people to take it with a, if they are partnered, to take it with your partner, because then you get to learn a lot, not only about yourself, but about the other, and then to practice. So I'm always really shocked at how long couples will go in a place of not talking about whatever the issues are around this. And it seems like sometimes menopausal and andropausal couples who have been together for perhaps a long time and really, really love each other. And then, as a lot of times women will describe it, all of a sudden, it feels like I have cut glass in my vagina when I have intercourse, and, you know, now I don't really want to have sex, right? Pain isn't something that we tend to move toward. And so if the male counterpart in that couple is starting to have erectile dysfunction and their female counterpart is like caretaking them, instead of saying, well, let's get to the root of this, right? It can become a habit. And so erectile dysfunction has its own whole list of root cause issues that can be fixed, and you don't right. want it to become a habit, right? Vaginal tissue atrophies. If you don't use it, you lose it. So you don't want to just stop having sex. So, you know, I'm always pretty surprised when I find that couples have maybe not had sex for like 3 years and they haven't said a word about it. Like, how do you feel about this? Or I'm sad, you know, they just don't even talk about it. And so I like to get the word out about this. Like, you know, this is a conversation that is a little bit like if you notice your partner is squinting as the sun's going down while you're driving, you're going to say, are you having a hard time with your vision at night now? Maybe you should get your eyes checked. I mean, you know, it's just that it's the same, right? Trying to normalize it to not have shame surrounding it, or like, oh, I'm no longer masculine or feminine, right?
Well, anyone who's tuning in here, if this is something you've been dealing with, your partner's dealing with, or you've been struggling with together as a couple, I'd highly recommend to check out Dr. Keisha's the libido care. I think you're going to find a lot of really useful information. And I like the fact that you bring up, this is going to help open up that dialogue. You know, again, I think you're right. This has been my observation that poor communication often leads to frustration at one end or the other of, you know, not having that desire met. And this is just a great opportunity to get that conversation going. And again, learn about yourself, learn about your partner, and have a better, you know, sexual life.
I have something called kiss tips. Keep it simple, sweetie. And they're like, they're very simple things that you can do in each of the different categories. If you would like, I can share that with your audience.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Well, I really appreciate you spending time with me on the podcast today. Again, we'll drop the link in the show notes. And again, always a pleasure talking with you, Dr. Keisha.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.